for listening. This is the Bill Quinn Podcast about nonprofit events and organizations in New York City. This week, I'm taking a look back at an old episode, episode 5, where I interviewed the founder and executive director of City Science, Thor Snilsberg. We talked about all the great things that City Science does for science teachers in New York City. So Thor and I had a really great conversation, but a very long conversation. There was a whole bunch of stuff I had to cut out. Really great stuff about students that they've had, programs that they've run, just a whole bunch of different things, some of the highlights of their first 5 years. That's what this episode is. In addition to that, City Science has got a big campaign right now to raise money on Giving Tuesday, which is this Tuesday. So, if you like what you hear, I would definitely recommend supporting them this Tuesday. And with that, here's my interview with Thor. You're coming up on your fifth anniversary?
Yes, we just completed our fifth full school year on June 30th.
So in this first 5 years, what are some things that stick out to you? What are some of the highlights? What are some of the memories that you have of working with students or working with staff? Or what were some of the things that would kind of stick out to you and are the highlights of the last 5 years?
Personally, the highlights are always the expressions on kids' faces or working with teachers who really are opening themselves up to new ideas. So we've worked in the nation's newest national park, which is Paterson, New Jersey. Not many people know, but that's the birthplace of American industry, first planned industrial city. And what we really worked hard to do was transform the perspective that these teenagers had about their city. They felt like they were living in a proverbial ghetto. They were not proud of Paterson in the way that you would hope they'd be proud. And now they are literally tour guides working for the National Park Service, explaining that these buildings have historic significance in the history of the United States that really is fairly recent. Not many people know that during World War II, more airplane engines were built in Paterson, New Jersey than any city in America. The engine of the Spirit of St. Louis was built in Paterson. And these are things that the kids know now and they're proud about and they talk about, and they talk about the history of aviation and they talk about their city in a different way. So did they learn science? Yes. Are we trying to turn every kid into a scientist? No. But we want them to be passionate about it because I think scientific literacy is probably one of the most important 21st century skills. We're great consumers of technology, great consumers of scientific innovation, but are we literate? Do we really know the origins of these inventions and why and how they've shaped our lives?
What do you think about and you think like, oh, that's one of the moments that I really enjoyed. That's one of the moments that made me think like, I'm really glad I'm doing this.
I think a lot of school today is based on outcomes. Did we pass the standardized test? Those are measures of outcomes. I'm really more interested in outputs. What are kids making? What are they doing with their hands? So an output might be a brochure that they're using in the national park to introduce people to the features and the historical players. So I can tell a story about the first urban forestry study, which was completed in Paterson, New Jersey, third largest city in New Jersey, and this is the first urban forestry study ever done. It was done by 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th graders in the course of one summer, and they surveyed over 100 trees in the historic district, all street trees, and they labeled the missing ones. They learned how to use GPS technology. And the really great part about this story, Bill, is a couple days before the culminating event, the final presentation, these two teams who were working on forestry thought that they messed up the rows in their Excel spreadsheet, which would throw all of their records off. The numbering would be wrong. Therefore, every tree after that mistake would be mislabeled. So what was really great about this story is the way they argued about it and talked about it and tried to figure it out and then said, hey, Mr. Thor, hey, Mr. Dave, I need to get outside right now, and we have to go spot check some of these trees to make sure we didn't make an error. They came back 4 hours later. They'd spot checked every 10 trees, and they found out they hadn't made a mistake and that all the data was fine. And that was a real pride in their learning and like a pride in their accomplishment that I don't think you see in a typical, I took a test today, I turned in a paper. So I think the outputs, the urban forestry studies, the solar chargers that our students build and take home, walking tours, these types of things that they lead is really where students develop a sense of excellence in their learning. Another example, Bill, is just came from a few weeks ago. We're running a summer camp that's out near the Rockaways here in Brooklyn, and we're teaching some very basic coding. And a lot of these kids were introducing to coding for the first time, but some of the kids have been working on this on their own for a while. So the summer camp provided us with 25 laptops for these students, and the laptops showed up, and there was no password, and there was no login. And our STEM instructor was a little bit perplexed, trying to get on the phone, trying to track down the password. And one of the students was really tech savvy and asked if he could crack a computer open and play around with it for a while. And in a matter of a half hour, he'd figured out what the password was. And we all joked that because of that student taking that type of direction and taking that type of, you know, leadership in the class, that it really kind of embodies the type of classroom that we want. It's something you do with them. You don't teach at students, you do it with them. So you model scientific behavior. You say, wow, we have a problem. How can we figure this out? And it's amazing. A lot of times that takes kids from sitting back in their chairs to sitting on the edge of their chairs to coming up in the front of the classroom. And in this case, figuring out the school password for the internet so that everybody could get online and get running faster than we hoped.
That's pretty cool. What are some of like the most fun toys that you have here? I mean, we're sitting in a room just like kind of surrounded with all kinds of stuff. What are some of your favorite things that you have here? Some favorite like experiments or toys? I use toys loosely, but what are some of your favorite things that teachers can use or have used or you use for your programs?
That's a really good question.
Favorite is it like picking a favorite kid?
Picking your favorite toy is a little bit like picking a favorite kid. One of the best parts about being the director of City Science is buying new toys for our science programs. K-8 science, and being a parent myself of a one-year-old and a four-year-old, it's really fun to see what's available and what's out there. Every year around Christmas time, we produce a gift guide for parents because there are a lot of great things today, maybe more than ever. I'm looking here at a kit called Snap Circuits Pro. It's teaching you everything you would want to know about electricity and circuitry. I like it on the box because it says it's from ages 3 to 108. It really is that much fun. It's easy to use. And it's about a $150 kit, and we loan it out quite frequently. And it's a great way for students to feel instant success in creating circuits and understanding resistance and understanding capacitors and these types of things. What's fun about that is we realize that $150 a pop, it could be a little price prohibitive. So we've actually worked with one of our STEM professionals, a mechanical engineering graduate from City College, to source all of these parts from China, buying them in bulk, and we can produce the same kit that Snap Circuits has basically for about $40 as opposed to the $150, and kids can take it home. So it's not quite as slickly produced, but it is things that kids can take home and keep learning from. Another one of my favorite items in our lending library are some of our cooking supplies, because a lot of people don't think of cooking as science, but you really are transforming things through heat, through time, mm-hmm. through processes. There's a ton of measurement. It's a really great way to engage kids in learning about their bodies, learning about vitamins, learning about processes and steps, and observing change over time. One of the best ways to observe change over time is by pickling something. Fairly easy process. You can pickle almost anything, I've learned, and some friends of ours here in New York City have developed a really stylish way of pickling things. Their name is Kirby and Kraut, like sauerkraut, and they produce a really handsome system for pickling, and I think kids really love it. They don't always love the way it tastes, I'll tell you that, Bill, but they love this process.
You have something, when I've gone through the library here, you have something that measures speed, and I'm always, that one sticks out in my mind is, it's got to be like so many fun uses of that.
We have a radar gun. It's been fantastically popular. It's not popular with teachers and principals when kids are running down the hallway trying to clock themselves, which seems to happen quite regularly. But City Science, we're connecting the city to scientific studies. And one of the things you may be familiar with is Safe Routes to School, which is making school zones safer. So we've had kids do a number of traffic studies, counting cars. There's a lot of math you can involve, a lot of graphing. And then the radar gun is the thing that everybody wants to use. So we definitely need to probably have a few more radar guns because kids love to use it and they're really fascinated. And we talk about how it works and what radar is in a conceptual level. And then we also talk about ways that they can calculate speed without having a radar gun. So knowing the distance that that car is away and then timing it until it passes by your mark. And it turns out that sometimes kids are probably more accurate than our fairly inexpensive radar gun. But it's really great to get kids thinking about that and doing data comparisons and data analysis while they're also studying about their school environment and the streets that they cross every day to get to school. And it's really a great program, thinking about civil engineering in that way as well.
First off, another huge thank you to Thor Snilsberg for sitting down and talking with me. If you want to hear more of our interview, check out episode 5. If you're looking for a great organization to donate to this Tuesday, think about City Science. And I think that's it, actually. Check you next time. Well, if you like that episode, I have good news. There's plenty more on my website, thebillquinnpodcast.blogspot.com. Plus, you can get notices about future episodes by following me on Twitter and liking my Facebook page. The Twitter account is @BQuinnPodcast. Also, you might work for an organization, run an organization, or know somebody who does work for an organization that would be a great fit for a future episode. Please get in touch. Email me at thebillquinnpodcast@gmail.com. I hope to hear from you.
I want to see if it comes.
Testing, testing. Am I smiling when I'm talking? It always helps. I